and welcome back to the Loop Marketing Podcast. In today's episode, you'll hear from Scott Moore, co-founder and CEO of Collaboratory. Scott Moore is the king of brand-to-brand collaborations, and he has put his business in motion to bring the power of these collaborations to marketers across the globe. Scott is joined by Kwegi's Vice President of Marketing and Innovation, Ryan Green, to discuss what brand collaborations are, the opportunities they bring to brands, and the impacts they have on businesses' growth trajectories. Let's get started. All right. So today we are excited to welcome industry veteran Scott Moore to the Loop Marketing Podcast. Scott is the founder and CEO of Collaboratory, but his background is filled with experiences with powerful brands ranging from Coca-Cola to Time to PBS, and also including being the CMO of Best Buy and Wynn Resorts. So Scott founded Collaboratory to reinvent the complicated and often tedious process of activating brand collaborations and helping make them more accessible and scalable, but most of all, exciting and fun. So thanks for being here with us today, Scott.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
And then, of course, we also have a veteran for our podcast, Ryan Green, who's the Vice President of Marketing Innovation for Kwegi. So Ryan and Scott have been working together over the last year or so to incorporate some data-driven reasoning to these recommended brand collaborations. And he's super excited by the idea and the potential that brand-to-brand collabs can have to actually grow brands. So to kick us off, talking about the power of brand-to-brand collaborations, I'm sure that all of our listeners understand at a high level what brand-to-brand collaboration involves in the sense that two brands are working together in some capacity. But Scott, I'd like to hear from you how you define what a brand collaboration is and how it's inspired you in your career.
Absolutely. And again, thank you very much. Our experience with Kwegi, I know this isn't a Kwegi shill, but remarkable team, remarkable brains, technology, and Collaboratory wouldn't be where it is today without Ryan and his team. So I know that wasn't the question and that was shameless, but that's how I treat
it. We appreciate it nonetheless.
You can count that on for me. So brand-to-brand collaboration. There's been a lot of focus in the last 10 years on how brands partner with influencers. And so we've seen that. We did it very early on at Best Buy. We weren't quite sure how it would work. But that's a brand to effectively an entity that just has an audience. If I partnered 10 years ago with LeBron James or Paris Hilton or whomever, basically they bring their, or you know, Ronaldo or Messi or any of these remarkable people, they bring gobs and gobs and gobs of followers, and they're able to amplify a message to them. I think the first one I did, we paid someone somewhere to like get Tom Brady to say something on Twitter about Best Buy Mobile. This is a 2008, I think. But when you look at what that is, that's a brand to an individual with a tremendous audience. The same way Time Magazine has an audience, but it's really one way. And nowadays it can be measured by, well, what's the value of that audience? And it's pretty clean. What I like and what we like about brand to brand, so brand one, X in the middle, brand two collaboration, is that each partner is bringing something unique to the table. And so it always starts with, what are your assets and your equities? Like, oh, okay, one of the most famous ones in the last few weeks, which is funny, like collabs are being famous by the week, not by the quarter, not by the year, was Tiffany and Nike. Each brand brought their brand and what it stood for in the marketplace, but they also brought different assets to the table. And a great brand-to-brand collaboration, which is why I like it and where our business is focused on this, is that when one brand shows up, they bring who they are and what they can do. And if you're a retail organization, you bring stores. And if you're a social media platform, you bring social assets. If you are a big spender, you bring dollars. Every single brand brings something unique to the party. And that's why the fundamental math of collaboration, brand partnerships, and collaboration, it just works. Because I'm bringing something, my partner's bringing something, collectively, we're getting something bigger, but we haven't put in 100% of the cost. And so that's a bit rational, but that's the fundamental case for what makes it work. That's not what makes them exciting, but which we'll talk about that in a second.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the Tom Brady example from 2008 when he had one Super Bowl ring. Because I think, and one of the reasons you're a pioneer in the space is you recognize that Tom Brady is a brand, right? Yeah, he's a person with a lot of followers, but he's a brand, right? The same way Time Inc. is a brand that has an audience of followers too. So it isn't this leap for people, for marketers to take this logic from partnerships that they had before. Influencer wouldn't have been where it was today if it wasn't for Michael Jordan having a collaboration with Gatorade, right? Like, the seeds of this have already been there. And it does need to take into account the, you know, some of the math on who the followers are, what those overlap areas are. I don't think you want to have 100% overlap. The magic happens when there's like-minded brands that have similar but adjacent audiences, where they are able to, where it makes sense for both the audiences of both brands to recognize the similarities and have it be something that's very natural and organic, and that it makes sense, right? And I know you have a number of examples of brands that have done that well, but on the flip side, there's a lot of brands that haven't. You do have to, you're putting some risk when you're putting an association with an ambassador or with another brand out there, because they bring all those equities, but they can bring negative consequences in the future that you don't realize, right? Subway's ambassadorship with didn't go well with what's the guy's with Jared, yeah, right. And that was that worked for 10 years for them, right? Until
the Sprint guy. Who's now? I just called the Verizon guy the Sprint guy.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was one of the most, just a genius tactical move. When can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Is on to one of the direct competitors. Yeah. So I don't know what Sprint uses him now anymore. But yeah, and I think that's the difference between, I use influencers. I love influencers. I follow things. So it's not that it's wrong. But I think because when brands come together, they're serious. They're corporations,
yeah.
And they have business objectives to achieve that sometimes are not just attention getting. And I think there's inherent sort of multipliers on outcomes when you get it right, and a level of seriousness, because there's brand reputational risk for both. And I think that's a big difference.
There's professionalism when you're working with brands. There's not that same professionalism when you're working with Jared. There should be, but there's a lot more risk of tainting your brand's reputation by working with 100 micro influencers than working with one well-oiled brand machine, right? That has stakeholders and has the years of reputation there. So in a lot of ways, there's probably less risk than there might be with, than there is with influencer. Would you agree with that, Scott?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think it relates to the how these things are constructed. So, what I think one of the things that makes collaboratory different, brand collaborations have been around forever. Like, this is not a new idea. What is different is that we looked at the market and said, hey, wait a minute, this is a real category. This is a thing. If you're a marketer, you should have a plan for this. Every other piece of that marketer's, I love to sit the imaginary knight to the round table. You're sitting there with the CMO and various knights, Sir Lancelot's over there from media and whatnot. Everyone else is bringing math, data and insights, and they're reporting off a platform. They're printing out a dashboard. Even creative, the ads are measured now, especially in the digital space. You're getting, look, the A/B testing said this. This is why the line or the image emerged. And then you have a very powerful weapon. I mean, a little bit creative, like the Vorpal sword of partnering with another brand, another institution, another entity. And those teams have been at a little bit of a disadvantage because it hasn't had the rigor, the tools, the resources to be serious about, hey, here's an audience match or a significant gap where there should be one. We think this is an opportunity here. Here's what we'll bring to the table. Here's what they'll bring to the table. here's what our agenda is, here's what their agenda is. And I think there's the old adage, you know, perfection is the enemy of the good. In brand collaborations, you want to get to a great outcome that allows both brands to achieve their independent objectives in a very breakthrough, very cost-efficient way. And we're part of our job is to arm those teams with those facts and those tools to be able to compete, because there are ideas. Like I've you know, sponsored and signed off on a lot of good ideas, a lot of bad ideas. Some were data driven, some were not. Like that's just part of playing the game. Yeah. But I want all my teams, if I'm in chair, to be able to be informed, to be able to execute seamlessly, and to have breakthrough thoughts and breakthrough campaigns that hit the hearts of their consumers. And I think one of the things we talk about at Collaboratory is, you know, I was fortunate to work on some pretty amazing advertising over the years back when I was just focused on ads. And those were visually arresting things, or a headline popped and it caught my attention. The right collabs are not just visually and artistically arresting, they're conceptually arresting. One of my favorite ones, which is probably just a product thing. So again, product collabs have been happening forever. When I saw the Lego Stranger Things collab, I was like, that is just cool, because they were paying attention. Now, I don't play Legos, even though it's cool to do that as you're an adult now. But like they did the Lego, the upside down, the same thing. I was like, that's so clever. And it wasn't just slap another logo on another product. It had deep meaning. Yeah. And even though I have more of a Stranger Things person than a Lego person, I appreciated that. And it caught my attention authentically, which is the hardest thing to do in any marketing era.
No, you're absolutely right. I'll go back to the nights at the round table there and giving rigor and data to collaborations. Because a lot of times I think it does start with a light bulb moment or an instinct, right, that hits to the heart. But those can be very risky if you haven't done your due diligence and really looked through what this is going to mean for both brands' audiences. So being able to have a data-driven approach to validate those light bulb moments, so that you're sitting next to media and PR and creative that have all this data and rigor and spreadsheets and data visualizations, you have that when you do it with Collaboratory's process, right? You have
absolutely.
You definitely are able to get there, and maybe the collaboration isn't always just two brands, right? You talked about Stranger Things, which is a brand in itself, but it's also a TV show. So is there a product placement adjacent to it, the way that Coors and Yellowstone are almost synonymous with each other right now, right? The definition of brand, I think, certainly is broad here to some degree as well.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. If you look at the number of collabs and partnerships that were featured, the Super Bowl is what it is. It's great. I'm a fan of it. I generally, you know, not every brand should be on there, but it's the one time a year you're going to get, you know,
yep,
100 million Americans.
And how many of those were collabs, right? Or some?
Yeah, I don't know the percentage. It was a lot, though. And like even back to your point of how do you leverage assets creatively, even within one family. So Miller Coors had a very interesting collab that four different brands were featured in their process. So we would call that in our world a coalition collab, which you got to cut. It's more than one, not 1x1. It's 1xxxx. And so who was featured in that? Miller Lite versus Coors Light. It ended on New Moon, which is very clever. So haha, well played, agency, whoever came up with that. But they also integrated DraftKings in the pre-launch phase, where people could go guess the Easter eggs that were going to appear in the spot.
Yeah.
That right there was great. So all brands benefited from it. It's a cheeky little nod to New Moon, which would not get a lot of Super Bowl ad time anyways. Yep. And then what is DraftKings trying to get out there? They're trying to awaken the world of prop betting, which I know a little bit about from Wynn. Prop betting is like bet on the random stuff. Don't bet on the core. You know, when will the quarterback touch his helmet? Whatever, the random stuff. All that came together through a collaboration. And that's exciting. And that's, I think, part of our, you know, to click up a level, marketing used to be where the creative people went, and advertising is where the creative people went to do creative stuff and break through. It's got pretty mathy pretty fast. And I'm glad that it has, because it's treated a little more seriously. But when it comes to brand-to-brand collaborations, we just believe it should not be the sole domain of the C-suite. Obviously, the CEOs I've worked for, they knew our brand pretty well. Like, I was a marketing leader, but you can't tell me that the CEO of Best Buy or the CEO of Wynn does not know their brand. They do. It's just a very small pool. Like, that human being can only have a network so big. They can only think so many thoughts, and they can only run to so many people. The functions of the old way are proximity. I ran into you. Personal networks. We both went to HBS together or were at Kellogg's at the same time. And serendipity, which is what you described, like, hey, I ran into you at the Delta Club, at the Grammys, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. And I certainly trust the stewards of companies to know what they want to do. But yeah. that does not look like the rest of marketing. And the creative people who went in to do interesting breakthrough, build brands with, as their career, I want them to have the ability to say, hey, wait a minute. I have, these ideas are good. And you don't have to do a collab just with Nike or with Rihanna. You can do lots of micro collabs to learn and get some data, some fact patterns. And so that's part of what we're trying to do.
It's not an all-in move. You don't have to. Tiffany and Nike's brands are not forever intertwined because they had their week in the sun, right? The way that DraftKings did it. And by the way, I'm a horrible prop bettor, Scott, so you'll make a ton of money off of me anytime that we make any side bets on anything. I'll go back to your comment about how quickly marketing has moved from a creative realm into a math realm. I'm one of the math guys here. I think the power is when you get to both, when you have the math people who can speak about the emotion and the heart and the soul of a creative piece or of what a brand could be. I think because collabs are both old and new and are having their moment right now, those ideas can come from anywhere. It can come from the deepest quant analysis and finding that nugget in the bottom of a S4 Amazon bucket barrel of data. Or it can come from the dreamer, right? And come from somebody who's really focused on the visual, or it can come from somebody it can come from the CEO sometimes that is that ultimate brand steward. Those ideas can come from anywhere. And I think that's what makes this space so exciting, is that there's not one mindset that's going to be dominant in this space. In fact, I think it, true to the name collaboration, has to be from a number of different parties. It could be from in-house teams or agencies or consultants that bring these ideas forth, that are the ones that ultimately move forward. They could be macro or micro in nature. It can really be anything that you can want, and you can have a very tight or loose definition of what a brand is to bring these ideas forward. I feel like it's knocked down a lot of silos and barriers that needed to be knocked down between marketing departments anyways.
You know, I think part of, whether it's a micro partnership or collaboration or a macro partnership or collaboration, the thing that has to be universal is that the sum of the two together is greater than its individual parts, right? So how can brands go down that path and figuring out the right partnerships and how to right size those partnerships and get started on what can be sometimes a tedious process?
Boy, that sounds like, I feel like you just threw a hanging curveball to me so I can pitch collaboratory. So thank you. She just at least just grooved one for me. So the way we think about it, and I think you've got a lot that you guys just said, which is true. It should not be the domain of the high priests and priestesses. Like, it should not be the C-suite. We want the right ideas to win. I love concepts that I would have killed. That's how I know we're doing something good. If I would have killed it and it's actually better, I'm like, okay, the math and the science is winning. That's my favorite thing. So at any rate, the way we think about it is, the first thing you need to do is understand two things. Any brand of any size and scale. And we work with huge billion-dollar brands and tiny emerging brands. And there's been people who try to shove us up to the bigs and down to the smalls, and I refuse. Because what we want is audience matching and conceptual interest. That, you know, and also just take Liquid Death, who I talk about all the time. Partnering with them 3 years ago is very different from partnering with them now. Same brand, you know, they've built it over time. You'd have been using them differently 3 years ago than you would today, and different from 5 years from now when they're bought by Coca-Cola or whoever buys them, right? So first thing, understand your audience. Who are they? What makes them tick? And what brands do they love that are hidden beneath? Because every marketer, myself, when I worked at Best Buy, all I thought about you was a Best Buy customer. You were 100% a Best Buy customer, even though demographically, psychographically, occasion-based, you were, you know, you're the same person. You're sleeping with other brands. You're eating with other brands. You were dancing with other brands. But we thought you as this one thing. There's a fundamental connection between brands through their customers. So one, know that well. And that's where Coeggy and team have been so helpful. Second thing, which is so obvious, and the fancy way to say this, if you call your friends from Harvard Business School, it's the Clayton Christensen jobs to be done way to think about it. What marketing job am I trying to accomplish right now? That is another way of saying, what am I, with whom am I trying to win, to tell them what, when? You can segment based on, oh, I want to win Black Friday. I want to win with African Americans. I want to win in Texas. I want to win whatever, millennials, not millennials. These are marketing jobs to be done that each brand manager has to think about. Like, how am I going to break through and capture the heart and mind of this customer for this moment? So who's my audience? What am I trying to get done? We do that work. That's what begins the process of figuring out who a potential prospective brand partner is. This is unique, I think, a bit just because of my background and those two really unique environments of retail and casino. We look at both and we're like, okay, let's not go just sell a Lollapalooza sponsorship or an opportunity to do some existing thing. Let's build something. And it's not, when you hear bespoke, you think not software. No, the software powers the opportunity to say, wait a minute, audience match, job match, what can be. So that's step one. We reach out. The next step, which is interesting and kind of counterintuitive, we drew our biggest insights in time when we're like rich and famous, which we are not, but someday hopefully we will be. We will not be an agency with 25 beautiful logos, each paying us $1 million and feeling great about us. That's not our vision at all. I want thousands of brands on this platform. I want them interacting all the time based on their audiences and their jobs. I want it to feel like a marketplace. And that word marketplace is not commonly used in this segment at all. The thing of it, the way we started really, when it broke through, I'm like, huh, all right. Let's think of what are the characteristics that we describe that our customers face. Strategy-driven, serendipity as strategy. Proximity, personal relationships. That sounds a lot like how I met my first girlfriend. If you look at the characteristics, it was like, oh, we met because we lived near each other. We met because we knew someone's sister or brother. We met because serendipitously we were on the same bus ride home that night. Those are characteristics for how love, the market for love was solved for millennia. Now I'll take a look at how my kids will find out on their first girlfriend. It's very more likely when they find their partner, they will have used a digital platform. They will have written a profile that says, this is the job. This is horrible to talk this way. Here's the job I'm trying to find. I want to find a partner who likes things like this and will do these things for me. The market will respond with like, I'm that kind of person. She'll say no. I'm this kind of person, he'll say no. The process is no, 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 no. Hey, hold on, what? And so whether it's the market for love or the market for jobs, we've all been on Indeed. Job hirer says, I'm looking for this kind of person. Marketplace responds. The market for collectibles, that's Etsy. I have a product list. Who wants to respond? We realized that marketplaces actually solve really complex human problems very efficiently. And they lead to dialogues that get to excellence. And so we're like, hey, can we help brands say, this is the therapy part. This is the job we're trying to get done with these people at this time. We then help them find other brands who want to solve a similar problem. And that's a big piece of our product today.
So an intermediary piece to that too, you talk about your kids finding love on Tinder, there's an algorithm. That's in between that. Etsy has an algorithm. Can you talk about algorithms and AI and how that may adjust the brand collab space? Where do you see that headed? And how are you guys involved?
Absolutely. I've thought a lot about this. And also, one of the things you need in AI or machine learning is gobs of data. And one of the things this segment does not have is that. So you're not seeing lots of exceptionally brilliant breakthrough AI-driven solutions because there's no massive data set to comb across, right? So like this is the first thing is what we learned, what I learned, and garbage in, garbage out for math, for compute. So one, there's that. That is one of the things we are, why the world needs a collaboratory, is we're going to be one of the few people who tracks all this. And not just track, did it yield a successful outcome? Did it create this? But every single step in the process, why is it that everyone, you know, Hilton wants to win with such and such customer? Why is it that none of those customer brands want to partner with them? Now, I just made that up. We don't work with Hilton. That's a signal. The absence of a signal is signal. And so sort of that's call it thing one. Thing two, a place I see us partnering, I think it's you partner more or collaborate more with AI platforms. Some of our customers have deep machine work going on, and they may identify a gap in their business, in their model, a customer who's likely to attrite, whatever the issue is. It makes sense to me that the math will understand problem identified, job to be done. We'll say, okay, there's like my analysis, which is fine. We'll probably lose to deep machine. But I don't care. I'm very humble and like, what's the problem? How do we solve it? I think what we'd say is don't just drop another display ad there. Don't just, you know, up your digital spending here or host a concert nearby. What collab, what partnership could really light that up to win the hearts and minds of the customer? Again, Hispanics in LA, whatever, sneakerheads in Boston, it doesn't really matter. So it's more partnership with AI and ML. And then the last thing, just since ChatGPT is getting so much love and attention in the new Microsoft, you know, Bing 8.0, there's some cool stuff out there. Like you can just Google, go in there and be like, oh, not Google, you can ChatGPT, you know, brand one, next brand two. And it's going to tell you what it thinks a collab should be. And I like that. There's actually another function where like you put in two brands and like two art pieces crawl across and make like a, you know, turducken, like two different ideas smashed together. That's cool. That's clever, but it's gimmicky. The way we are exploring using these things are, hey, so let's just say it is Nike and Tiffany. That's a proven collab. It would have been interesting for the team who built that to put into ChatGPT collab between Nike and Tiffany. What comes back to me is not what I would do, but it is certainly an interesting data point. I made this reference earlier today. It's sort of like an SEO-ready view of what the compute world thinks should happen. I take that as an input. What the compute world doesn't know is my strategy. It doesn't know the depth of my customer information and insights and where I'm trying to bend. But boy, is it interesting to know that, you know, if somehow that, you know, for Duncan, if somehow they guess like who should be the celebrity who should be at the drive up window in the Super Bowl commercial, that it had to be Matt or Ben. Like that didn't surprise me at all. But then, maybe they're trying to drive up window. Maybe the original thought, the computer thought the guy should be, Ben Affleck should be standing handing out munchkins. And so, whatever, I'm kind of off-piste at the moment. But that's how I see humans using technology in new, exciting ways. And in our vertical, it's to build powerful breakthrough collabs.
So an idea that I just thought of, it occurred to me, like when you talk about the Super Bowl, right, and the coalitions that were on there, some of those in the same house of brands, some that are, from different houses. They save money by going in together on that ad spot. They are able to both talk to one audience they're trying to win and a second audience that's adjacent to that they're also trying to persuade. So, you know, if brands do it well, they could be saving money together on the media side, because they're, instead of one company paying for those expensive Super Bowl spots or those, full takeovers of YouTube for masthead that, are in the seven figures per day, they can split that cost and they can reach a broader audience in a more relevant way. That's a, that can pay all the, for a lot of the strategy and background work, can save itself just on the media feed side of it too.
Well, actually, Ryan, that brings up one of our listener Q&As is about how to evaluate success of a collaboration. And obviously there's the win from saving money, that's success. But are there other ways that brands should be considering whether a collaboration has been effective apart from saving money and reaching a broader audience?
Sure. I think over time, so yes, that's a great question. Whoever, hats off to whoever asked that. Yes, I think when we start with, divide the cost and multiply the outcomes, which is one of our hooks, that's a CFO discussion, because they don't believe in this in the first place. They're like, that's foofy marketing stuff in the first place. Now it's unmeasurable. So, but that's true. That's basic math. That's not why to do it. I think it's less about broad awareness, so that's important. It's more about each time, it's treating this space with the same rigor every other part of the marketing funnel gets, and defining, okay, what are we trying to do, with whom, and how we measure it? That has to happen. Everyone wants, I always joke about this, I've been hiring and looking at multi-touch, omni-channel attribution tools for over a decade. So this is new to some, but around, if you're in retail, you've known about those for a very long time. As I spend a dollar, why was digital so effective at the beginning? Because it was the only thing we could track. It got 100% attribution for everything else that was spent. That was just patently untrue. There's no way. Yeah, it still is, but that's patently untrue. I think in all these cases, in CFOs, respectfully, one of my good friends, they want it to be like that Fidelity ad that's the green line. And it's like Google, the math will Google maps me all the way to the exact answer and tell me exact address of what this did. We're just not in that era yet. Maybe in 10, 15 years, we will be. But we don't have to navigate by the stars. We can use maps. We can use things besides GPS to navigate better. And that's what those tools provide. In the end, it's about the leaders defining what they're trying to do, being very crystal clear on the market they're trying to, the customers are trying to win with, and finding clever ways to capture their attention. And then with that attention, throw it in a direction where they'll do behaviors that are beneficial to the brand.
Yeah, I don't think an MMT model is going to be working well for anybody. In particular, there's less signal now with deprecation of cookies, with iOS and walled gardens, that was going to be a fool's errand for digital anyways. As it pertains to brand collaborations, I think you really need to think about what are the leading indicators of success? What are the things that are going to show somebody has a genuine interest in your brand that didn't before that collaboration? And it's a little bit easier when it is a product, obviously. The Nike Tiffany shoe, you'll be able to know pretty well when that sells. But we focus a lot with collabs on luxury, retail, clothing space. There's a lot of other opportunities and a lot of blue ocean space where collabs aren't as obvious, but where nobody's doing them right now. No one's doing collaborations in healthcare space, right? Maybe you have that Rodeo Dental example you'll want to talk about that's adjacent to that, but there's so many opportunities outside of luxury to do it well, where you can make true impact on your brand, where you can use the way that you're measuring upper funnel success for everything else and seeing, from an incremental standpoint, what happens when we added in, a collaboration into the ecosystem? What happened, to our brand perception? How much engagement did we get when we release this 100% on mobile and social, to, you know, start to have those conversations with CFOs and say, hey, we found a predictive indicator of success and we're smashing it out of the park when we surprise and delight our customers with executed, well thought out brand collaborations.
I want to talk about the role by micro collabs. Like a macro collab is what you saw in the Super Bowl or the Nike Tiffany. And so I want to come to that. I'm thinking back to a little bit what Lisa asked earlier. Like, one of the powers of this is not just take the math, divide it by two, you know, 1 + 1 = 3. It's a bit be having access to something, a good that's not actually available on the market. You can't buy it. Nike can't buy Tiffany's brand on a marketplace and just use it. It's not for sale. But clearly it said a lot about Nike. It took their ASP, the price point from, I don't know what the shoe was, $109 to $400. You're like, that was a Tiffany, right? So that's that. I think the other analogy is like, I don't know, my local sushi joint, which I love because everyone needs a good local sushi joint. It's not high end. It's just a neighborhood one. It was about years ago. They're like, would you like to see the, they didn't say it, yes, but it was effectively, you want to see the secret menu? I was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, what's on the secret menu? And they had like 6 rolls that the chef would make. I guess we just showed up enough, they gave it to you. And I felt like I was ordering off menu. And I worked at the Wynn. There's a lot of things at the Wynn that are off menu that are ridiculous. And the ability to tap into another brand just in general, but also very specifically. Like, again, part of the problem as I migrate towards micro collabs, you know, I was at Best Buy. That's a pretty big brand. We had a lot of rich and powerful friends. I remember as we were launching with Beats, the Diddy Beats, which are P. Diddy's version of a headphone. What was valuable to me was everything related to Beats, this new product, the exclusive. I don't even remember. Like, whatever it was, I had my agenda, and I was Best Buy. What they were excited was being able to have to talk to the blue shirt leaders and have them on the phone with P. Diddy. So just think about this. This is a non-normal thing, and it's an example from the stratosphere, big old brand, you know, big old artist. But they valued being able to have a direct combination, have the blue shirts talk to P. Diddy. That was not for sale. But in a partnership, it helped get the blue shirts fired up, which was cool, and it was cool. They're excited. That helps drive impact in store. Well, I don't remember the other components of the deal. It doesn't matter. It helped me get something done, I'm sure, at the time. And those are things that are exciting about being off, you know, products you can't get access to. The problem with this analogy is I'm using Best Buy and a humongous artist, which is what it's the myth of what a collab has to be, that you can't do a collab unless you call the president of Nike or you have Jay-Z on speed dial. I fundamentally disagree with that. And it's what Ryan was pressing towards. We think all brands can collaborate. And that's why we're so excited and why investors are excited about our business is the same way search started. It was all big brands. Well, you know, the long tail of search is pretty long. I think I don't have a barber anymore, but if I had one, he's gone. He's advertising on Google to make sure that he gets his share of wallet in my local neighborhood. We see collabs happening, not just big to big, or big to ball to small, but small to small. And that, you know, this artist who come through town and maybe they want to, they'll do a stop by a local pizza chain, which they couldn't have conceived of before. The artist will get something out of it, the local pizza chain. That's interesting. And so this all needs to be powered, not by relationships, not by serendipity. I sat next to so-and-so on the plane, but by strategy, by data, and a software platform that captures demand, creates demand, and then creates the means to execute it quickly.
So I know we're coming up on time, but I want to have one more question. So from your perspective, just as a consumer, what's your favorite brand-to-brand collaboration you've ever seen? And how do you think that collaboration has helped transform each of those brands?
Well, my favorite collab, which I was not aware of, was McDonald's and Burger King did a collab. And what I love about that is, like, if there's two brands who hate each other more. Maybe it's Coke and Pepsi. I'm not sure, but like the Red Sox and the Yankees, like the Cubs and the Cardinals. I don't know who, but like McDonald's and Burger King are like set in opposition. And they did a collab. The two brands came together for the Day Without a Whopper promotion that gave money from, it was international, but I love the idea that if it raised money like from Burger King that gave to Ronald McDonald House or, I love the notion that, like, with the right idea, these two big brands could come together to do something special and different. I wished, I'm a Red Sox fan, with the our announcer in Boston, a guy named Jerry Remy, when he passed, had I been the king of all things, I would have done a, had I been running the Yankees, I'd be like, hey, let's do a collab with the Red Sox to raise money for the Jimmy Fund or in honor of Jerry Remy as a signal of how much we should respect each other. And so I say that now, these are two ginormous brands again, but to me, it sells the macro point. Brands can collaborate. If you're paying attention, if there's a strategic job to be done, the audience alignment, sadly, between, you know, McDonald's fans and Burger King fans, they have their preferences. They look a lot alike. And so just that. And I like the little ones that catch. I love the little ones. I like the ones, you know, I always joke. One of the fundamental insights for Collaboratory was, as I was thinking about the state of the market, no better time to be a marketer, so much data that powers better segmentation. Thanks to media, I can get channels into your lives and interrupt you in your bedroom, at the stoplight. I can interrupt you everywhere, but it's all this age of digital distraction. I just don't pay attention. The question, the deepest question that led to Collaboratory was like, hey, what am I aware of that I shouldn't be? That is a really good question. Like, oh, how do I know that? I shouldn't. I'm not. And it suggests there's something bigger going on. And the one I came up with, I'm like, why do I know that Clinique and Crayola did a collab? Like, why? I mean, obviously, I have kids, but they're in college. We haven't bought Crayola in years. I've never bought a Clinique product in my entire life. But Elf and Chipotle, it's because it comes back to this original thought. They're conceptually interesting. And if I love one brand, I'm curious who they partner with and what that'll introduce me to. And so just that.
Well, awesome. Thank you both so much for being here today. I know I'm personally revved up now about brand collaborations. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening. Kwegi is an industry-leading performance marketing agency based in the Midwest. We've learned a lot since our founding in 2014 and started the Loop Marketing Podcast to share some of our hot takes on marketing trends we're following, best practices we've discovered, and actionable tips for improving your digital strategy. We'll see you next time.